The Rock and Roll Coffee Show is brought to you by Writers and Rockers Coffee Company, keeping the music and memories alive with some damn good coffee. Be sure to pick up your Rock and Roll Coffee Show coffee only at writersandrockerscoffee.com. And also brought to you by Retroactive, located at Broadway at the Beach in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, keeping you retro with everything from 70s, 80s, and 90s. ShopRetroactive.com. Today's guest is Lori Fetrick. You might know Lori as Ice from the hit competition TV series American Gladiators, which ran from 1989 to 1986. Lori spent 5 seasons on the show, took part in American Gladiators Arena Live Tour, as well as the Orlando Live Shows and International Gladiators. There's a new documentary series out now on Netflix called Muscle Mayhem, which tells the story of the show's success and how it almost ended before it got started. I highly recommend you check it out. We discuss the documentary, a little Lori's backstory growing up and how she became an American Gladiator, and more. If you like this show, I would love for you to become part of our YouTube family. Please be sure to subscribe to the channel, like, and comment so you don't miss any of the great guests and our exclusive YouTube-only contests and giveaways. This was a super fun conversation I had with Lori, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Thanks for watching. Lori, so you guys, American Gladiators has a documentary out now on Netflix and ESPN, mm-hmm. actually. But the Netflix one, Muscle Mayhem, I think it's called, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. That one you're involved in.
Yes.
Yes.
I was not involved in the ESPN one.
Right. Right. So we're going to get into that. I want to talk to you about that, but I want to get into a little bit about you first, because
okay.
I know you as Ice from American Gladiators, and a lot of my listeners probably do as well. Mm-hmm. But what kind of kid were you growing up? Were you the cool kid, the nerdy kid? What were you growing up?
I would say I was the tomboy kid that was in the neighborhood riding my bikes, making little jumps that, you know, you could jump your bike like 2 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
You know, I was the kid playing, you know, tackle football with the guys next door. My sister was the bookworm and she was the straight A student. And I just wanted to play sports. That's all I wanted to do. I didn't care about my grades. I mean, I had to at the time because I, you know, you have to carry that average just to stay on the teams. But other than that, I wasn't into it really. I just wanted to play sports. From the time I can remember, I was in the backyard shooting hoops with my dad. And it was just one of those kind of things. So in high school, I wasn't really the cool kid, but I kind of hung out with the group.
Well, that makes you cool.
I guess so, you know. Yeah, by default, I guess.
Right, right.
But I was just a little tomboy kid, you know, running the neighborhood, probably getting in trouble and, you know, parents yelling at all the time, but I had a great childhood. It was fun.
Sure, sure. Were you just you and your sister or did you have any brothers or?
I had just my one sister. She was 3 years older than me and complete opposite.
Really?
You know, and you do so kind of hear that, like if there's two girls or two boys, there's always one that's going to be a complete opposite, it seems like.
Right, right.
You know,
what was your what sport were you into?
First and foremost, it was really basketball. Just I think because playing hoops with my dad. But then I really got into softball when I started out in fourth grade. You know, and I was a catcher, third baseman, and I could hit, so I was always in the cleanup position,
hitting home runs.
I was that girl. You know, my dad was always yelling at me when I was playing third base because I'd scoot up really close. And I think I had braces at the time. He goes, I paid for those. Scoop it back. You know?
Yeah, that could be bad.
Yeah. But interesting enough, besides sports, my parents tried to get me in, like my sister played the piano. And so, you know, it's kind of, I think every at that point in time back, you know, back then, it's kind of like parents were like, okay, are you going to be in the music? Are you going to be in sports? What's it going to be? So they put a classical guitar in my hand, you know, and I was the kid that nobody wants to play classical. Everybody wants to play the electric guitar, you know? So they sent me off and I had lessons. And I remember at one point in time, I was reading music, you know, and I was playing classical, but that's not what I wanted to play. You know, I wanted to either play the electric guitar or I wanted to go outside and go play with the boys.
Mm-hmm. What music were you into? Were you into the rock and roll then?
I was in the rock and roll. My parents were really into country. So okay. I grew up with the Johnny Cash, Tanya Tucker. I mean, all those way back when, you know, country hit.
Good country.
So, yeah, exactly. You know, so that's what, I mean, that's all they played in the house was country music. That's all I knew. And so then as I got older, you know, that's when, I remember, Queen was huge, you know, back when I was growing up. And I remember getting their albums, A Day at the Races, Night at the Opera. And, you know, just like any little kid, I had anything I could put in my hand, playing, you know, pretending like I was singing in the, you know, in the living room. Yeah. But yeah, so, I mean, it just never really went that way. I just, you know, I kept playing sports.
Sure. Sure. And you grew up in California, I believe, right?
I grew up in San Bernardino, California. So Southern California.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So when did the love of bodybuilding come into play?
The love of bodybuilding came into play actually when graduated high school, wanted to go to college. Parents weren't really me into college. They thought I was just going to get married and be taken care of. You know, so I wasn't going down that road, although I tried to my very first year, tried to go to college, work at the same time, play sports. Didn't happen. So I had to work a 9-to-5 job and kind of started working out on my lunch hour. You know, because of the fact I was out of school, didn't know what to do, saw the women in the back, loved them. They were great. But unfortunately, they were very heavy and overweight. And I was like, oh, shit, is this what my future looks like? You know, kind of thing. And so I started going on my lunch hour, you know, just doing aerobics because that's what they were doing at the time. It was all ballets, you know. Mm-hmm. But my softball coach in high school started teaching us, you know, how to lift weights in the weight room to make us stronger, faster, you know. And so I knew a little bit just to get me in trouble with the weights. So I'd want to go in the weight section at lunchtime instead of doing aerobics. And then somebody said, you know, you should check out this gym down the road. It's called Brignoli's. It's for more serious bodybuilders. And I didn't even know what the word meant, really. But I went down there and everybody was really fit and in the training. And I started training there and somebody just went, oh my God, do you have the genetics to do bodybuilding? And I started looking up what that was. And I was like, let's do this. This sounds fun.
What is that? The genetics? Is it just a bigger boned or what is it?
You know what? Well, for me at the time, I have nice little small hips. I had some, you know, I had some shoulders on me from playing sports. I kind of had the butt on me as well from my mom's genetic side, but, it was easy for me to put muscle on my body because I was into sports. I was playing. So my body was kind of used to that. So when I started lifting, man, it just started coming on super easy, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, all of a sudden I started noticing like, wow, I'm getting like little shoulders. Oh, my biceps are going, my legs are starting to develop, you know? And it was at a very quick rate, meaning within my very first year. And after my first year, I did my very first contest and it was just kind of a little city local kind of thing. And lo and behold, I won.
You know? Here we go.
Exactly. So to be honest with you, that's kind of what started it all. If I hadn't won that contest, I don't know if I'd have kept going, but it gave me the taste of winning again.
Right. So probably pushed you a little harder.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
By the way, I absolutely, excuse my dogs.
Oh, we've had dogs on the show before. You're good.
I love the color of your sleeve. That's gorgeous.
Yeah.
I
used to live out in California and got this done in Hollywood, actually.
I mean, the colors are so vibrant. It's just really cool and amazing.
It's about.
Isn't it funny? Let me ask you.
Old now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Now it's funny because everybody's asked me. They're like, okay, so you, mine didn't turn out. It wasn't like a sleeve in the very beginning. Uh-huh. It started here, and then it went from here down to like my elbow area. And then one time I went to Maui and I just continued my forearm.
It's addicting.
So it's kind of like, and then everybody's like, well, why don't you do your other arm? I'm like, no, I just want to do one. I just don't want to do one arm. But if I did anything, it would be color like that on, you know, even if I just did like an upper portion or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very happy with it. I couldn't be more happy with it. I spent a lot of money on it. You know, the guy that did it, he was out there in Hollywood and he did like a lot of Johnny Depp's tattoos, a lot of the, you know, Motley Crue, a lot of the rock stars he would do.
Yeah. It's, you got very lucky because so many, as you know, I'm sure you've seen like tattoos. You're just like, whoa, you paid for that.
Well, you'd be surprised because we're getting off topic here.
I know, that's okay. Like,
but I live over in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and it happens probably a couple times a month, two or three times a month. People say, you didn't get those tattoos here, did you? I'm like, no, I didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, back on topic.
Back on topic. Here we go. All right. So you're bodybuilding, you're winning competitions. And then how soon after all that did the American Gladiator opportunity come about?
I'm going to say I did my very first bodybuilding show, like probably 24-ish around that area. Mm-hmm. And I competed for a good four to 5 years because I wanted to go pro after I realized, you know, dipping my feet into the bodybuilding world. And how it goes with bodybuilding is you got to kind of, you're walking up the ladder. So you start small, you start with city, and then you go state. And then from state, you go nationals. And from nationals, if you win it, you actually go pro, but you got to win the entire your weight class and the entire thing in order to go pro. I had my sights set on that. So I probably was in it, I'm going to say 4 or 5 years, but I'd already competed 2 nationals. And the last national I competed in, I placed 3rd place. And that year is the year that Gladiators came along and I went and auditioned, tried out, and I got the show. And that's was like, I don't have to bodybuild anymore. Yeah, I don't have to diet like that anymore.
right. So the audition, did you hear about it from an ad? Somebody tell you about it? How'd you hear about it?
No, I was, interesting enough, I was watching television one night and all of a sudden it came on and I was like, what is this? You know? And I watched it because one of the things that caught my eye was, Ray Hollett, who plays Zap, the very first original 13 episodes. Well, she was a bodybuilder. And so I knew of her and competing. I never competed against her, but I knew she was competing. So obviously when you're young and you watch television and somebody, you know, that's on television right away, you go, wow. Okay. I just thought it was really, really the stupidest show I'd ever seen. You know, I did, but I went like this, but I think I can do that.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I went down to Venice Beach to train and there was Ray. And I asked her, I said, hey, how can I get on the show? How can I audition? She goes, oh, just watch the show. All the stuff is at the end of the show. You know, and this was before cell phones. This was before computers, all of that. I'm dating myself. But anyway, so I watched the show. There was nothing at the end of the show. She gave me no information.
Yeah.
The only thing that was there was the production company. And I was savvy enough at that time to start doing the research on the production company, literally opening up the yellow pages. Right. I found the production company here in Hollywood. I actually went to the building and walked in and said, hey, I want to give you my headshot and my resume because I'd like to try out for the American Gladiators. And at that point in time, they're just like, well, we're having tryouts next month and hold on to that and show up, bum, bum, bum. So that's how that actually came about.
That was like meant to be.
I guess it was. It was in the stars. Exactly. Yeah.
So when you go to the audition, I mean, what, you had to be a little nervous, right?
Oh my God. Yeah. I was so nervous and so intimidated. I didn't know what I was doing, to be honest with you.
Right. So you get there, and then what happens at these auditions? They just put you through drills or what?
Well, pretty much on this one, it was like that. Because when I walked on the set, there was, or actually it was outside on the back lot of Universal Studios. So basically it was a complete cement pavement, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, you parked and they had signs that said American Gladiator tryouts. And so, you know, just followed the signs. All of a sudden I walk up and there's a line of like 75 girls, maybe even more, I don't know. And so you just kind of like, you know, they have their clipboard and they go, and your name is, give me your name. They give you a number and you slap it on your shirt and they're like, oh, just stand in that line right there and we'll get to you, because what you're going to do is we're going to go through a couple drills. Like you said, a 40-yard dash. We're going to do a simulated type of Powerball game. I didn't know what that was. You know, it's just they had to explain it to me. We're going to play tug of war. We're going to do some pull-ups. And then if you make it through all that, we're going to do an on-camera interview with you. It's like, okay. So it was an entire day.
And so at the end of the day, do you know if you got the job or no?
Not at all. At the end of the day, you know, I made it through all the drills and everything. And I felt like I did pretty good. And then they go, okay, come over here. Let's do an on-camera interview to make sure that, you know, I could speak. So I was like, okay. And they just go, hey, thank you so much. We'll be in touch.
Yeah.
And so you don't that know. Was it. So then, you know, being the Aries that I am, I'm picking up the phone going, have you decided yet? Nope. Have you decided yet? You know, so I did that for like a couple weeks.
Right.
And then I pretty much stopped calling. And then one of them called back and said, okay, so we narrowed it down from the 75 down to 20 girls. And you're one of the 20. We need you to come back. And we have some more games and auditions for you to play.
Uh-oh.
And I was like, oh shit. You know, so right. What they did come to find out is I look back over the years and they used the 20 of us as guinea pigs to test out new games is what they did.
Well, that's pretty genius.
It is genius on their part, you know, but and then it went from 20 girls down to 10, down to 5. And then they hired two of us.
And you were one of the two.
And I was one of the
all
two
those girls.
That took 3 months. It was a 3-month process because I had the first initial tryout and then the second initial tryout. And then I had to go back again when they dropped it down to 10. That was another tryout. I didn't have to go back to the 5. They just, I think more than anything at that 5, at that time, I was just coming out of bodybuilding and I was kind of hard looking, you know, and really muscular. And I had the 80s haircut, you know, really short on the sides, kind of like the mullet kind of thing going on. And they were hiring a new makeup artist and I found this out later. They told the makeup artist, they said, okay, we're going to bring in a gladiator or a potential gladiator. If you can soften her up, you'll get the job and she'll get the job. It's like, okay. So that's what happened.
Okay. So, all right. So now you got the job. And when you show up to work for the first day, that had to be a little intimidating with the gladiators that were already there, right?
Yeah, it was. But they were really, believe it or not, they're very nice.
Were they?
They're very welcoming because they knew they needed more teammates.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, they had already shot their first 13 episodes. They only had like three guys, three girls at that time. And then they realized they were getting hurt. So they needed more gladiators and they expanded it to like, I think maybe four. I think it might've been that 4 and 4. So they knew they needed some teammates. So it wasn't coming in taking their job. It was more along the lines of, oh, cool. We have more gladiators here. So it's going to take the pressure off of our bodies, you know, so that we can continue. So they were very welcoming, but it was still intimidating.
Sure. And did you connect with all of them right away? Or were there some where you were like,
No, I didn't connect with all of them. Actually, believe it or not, the first one I connected with was Lace.
Mm-hmm.
She was really nice. She kind of took me under her wing and she was like, hey, let me show you the ropes. This is what we do. And the other gladiators, they were nice, but she's the one who really went out of her way to help me out, you know, and show me around and everything.
Right. So in all these events, is there like a strategy going into filming an episode? Like, I don't know what, like if you're better at a certain event than say another gladiator, are they going to put you against maybe the better competitor at that event?
I don't know what they're
random.
I don't know. I'll be honest. I don't know. We don't even know. Mm. I'm sure they had their strategies, all the producers and directors behind the scenes. They knew their contenders because they're the ones who actually chose them. So let's say that there's a contender coming in and they're like, okay, she's really fast. So she's going to be great at Powerball. Let's put our better players at Powerball.
Right.
But then again, they still had to keep the playing field kind of even. So they couldn't put the best gladiators at every single event. You know, some of them weren't good at Joust. Some of them weren't good at other events. So I don't know. We still, to this day, don't know how they chose their gladiators for different events. Yeah. Did they just pull them out of a damn fishbowl? You
know? I would think there had to be some, some thought behind it.
You know? Oh, yeah. They had to because, but then again, think about it. The contender's coming in and they're supposed to be a great athlete. You know, in their class, maybe there wasn't too much thought. Maybe it was just kind of more of a rotating schedule for the gladiators to get enough airtime and make it equal airtime, you know, kind of thing. There were days that I showed up and I only did one event. And there were days that I showed up and I would do two and three events. So
did you not know until that day what you were doing?
Correct. We did not know until we showed up that morning. And then we walked in after we were done with makeup and everything. We walk into the studio and there is like, you know, a piece of paper posted and it said, this is what everybody's doing. That was the first year. And then the second year they started, you know, we'd walk into our dressing room and there was already a note under our door, you know, and said, okay, this is what you're doing today, you know, kind of thing. Yeah.
Were there any competitors that you, did not look forward to facing?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There was one girl, Peggy Odita. She was 5'9", weighing 185 pounds. And she just wiped the floor with me on every event, it seemed like. So when she was there, I was like, oh shit, I got to go against Peggy. You
know? So when you lose an event like that and you're the gladiator, does that make you feel like a little embarrassed or?
Not necessarily, because yeah. If you saw this girl, literally 5'9", 180, she was just rock solid, you know. More than anything, if you just put on a damn good show and a good event, and we all wanted to win against her, don't get me wrong. So we were just like going all balls out trying to beat her. And we did beat her at certain times. You know, there were events that we definitely beat her on. Maybe her foot would slip or something like that. And that's when you had to take advantage of it. But yeah, she was one of the competitors that we were just kind of like, really? You chose her?
Yeah. How about injuries? What's the worst injury you had?
Insane. For me, I tore a meniscus, a small little meniscus in my left knee. But I'll tell you, even as small as that meniscus tear was, it hurt like a bitch. I couldn't even walk on it. And I always say, you know, we were talking about this one day with another gladiator on the air. And I said, if we couldn't tape it, ice it, or shoot it up with cortisone, then we were pretty much done for the day. But if we could tape it, ice it, or shoot it up with cortisone, we're going back out on the field because that's what we are. We're athletes. And not only that, more than anything, we don't get paid if we didn't play.
Right.
So the producers were like, I remember when I tore my meniscus to my knee, I literally was hobbling along. And he goes, if I see you hopping along like that, I'm going to pull you. Mm. And I was like, oh shit. So that night after the event, I got into the doctor's office. I said, hit me with cortisone. I don't care. It's not good for you. And I was like, I don't care. I got to play.
Did they have doctors on site, I'm assuming?
Oh, hell no. No, nothing like that. Nah.
I thought they would have,
No, not at all. I feel very lucky that I only came out with, I had a small tear in my meniscus. My thumbs kind of got jacked up from the joust. Overall, I came out pretty damn clean compared to a lot of the gladiators. Do I feel it today, though? Oh,
yeah.
Oh God, yeah. I feel every it morning. Today. Every morning, my lower back, my neck, you know. Then again, my neck could be related to a wakeboarding accident, not an accident, but a wakeboarding situation I had in Florida. But other than that, I mean, some of the gladiators came out, they had, you know, torn ACLs. I mean, Laser had like 12 surgeries on his shoulder.
12,
because he just kept tearing his shoulder and his rotator cuff and everything else. I think the guys got more jacked up than the girls did.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So the injuries were pretty severe.
So in your documentary, in the Muscle Mayhem documentary, I think that's the one, because there was that one and the ESPN one.
Yeah.
But you guys were talking about the injuries and not having the insurance, and because you had to pay for when you got hurt, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Everything came out of our pocket. The one thing that the only thing we had was workman's comp, literally. That was it. Everything else is out of pocket. I think the ESPN one went really more into the injuries because of Thunder. And he was talking about his injury on the tour when he fell off the rings and had 7 herniated discs in his back. I can only imagine those doctor bills and how I would literally be so pissed off that, you know, everything came out of my pocket, doctor bills, MRIs, you know, you name it. I would have just been like, yeah, this is kind of bullshit.
Yeah. If it was in your contract, it might be legal, but I don't even know if that'd be legal today.
Not today.
Yeah.
But back then, I mean, our contracts were so bad. And, you know, the truth of the matter is, it's if I didn't sign it, another girl would have.
Sure. Of course.
You know?
Did you have anybody look at the contracts or did you just sign it yourself? And look at
yeah,
it?
We did, but it you didn't did. Matter because mm-hmm. even if I had a, you know, my entertainment lawyer look at it, no matter what he wanted to redline out of it and change, they'd be like, no. This is the standard contract. Everybody has the same contract. And I think that's kind of in the documentary, as a matter of fact, and one of the the Muscle Mayhem one. And we had an executive producer, Julie Rush, and super cool. She's a cool lady. But at the same time, in the documentary, she kind of goes, well, they did sign a contract. You know, but you kind of got to go, yeah, but it was so one-sided and so screwed. And if we didn't sign it, somebody else would have signed it. So don't give me that kind of cocky cop-out attitude of, well, they had their contract, mm-hmm. you know, they well, knew what they were getting into.
That's kind of why I was asking, because I mean, in a way she is kind of right. Right. You guys did sign it. I mean, just like the music industry, same way.
But here's the thing. We didn't know the severity of the injuries yet.
Right.
There's the difference. We didn't know what this show was going to do for our bodies. We didn't know the show was going to blow up to where it was going to be this worldwide phenomenon. And then there was going to be merchandising and toys. We didn't know all that when we first came out of the gate. So at the same time, we saw the contract. But really?
Mm-hmm. And they didn't want to adjust anything later on, right?
Well, come to find out, because it was Samuel Goldwyn Company, and that I guess it's very true. It's known in the industry that we didn't know it at the time, but Samuel Goldwyn, his father was absolutely non-negotiable for anything. And it trickled down to the son when the son took over the business as well. Absolutely. Your contract is what it is. I'm not negotiating. Either you love it or you leave. It was really stupid on his part, though, because the fact that he was so blindsided and one-sided and just like greedy about it, that he couldn't foresee the future, because the show could have been on for 20 years, even if they wanted to, if they would have just taken care of their principles and put maybe a little bit of money back into the show.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they didn't.
So you guys did a live version of it. Was that after the show was over, or was that
that was the last ditch effort to keep it going?
Okay.
Was the live show, you know, and that was the one down in Orlando, Florida, Kissimmee. And it was like the Knights and Warriors. Ever been to Knights and Warriors type of? Medieval times.
We have one here in Myrtle Beach. Medieval times.
Mm-hmm. Same concept.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a little bit different because with the medieval times, you can switch out characters, horses, and all that kind of fun stuff. With gladiators, you can't really switch them out too well. I mean, you know, ice is ice and Dallas is Dallas and, you know, it is what it is, but it was just kind of weird having people sit there and eat dinner. And then they'd want us to go around and sign autographs during a certain amount of time, during a certain time when they were eating dinner. So their hands and fingers were all greasy and their mouths were full and they were like, oh, hold on. And they were grabbing shit for you to sign. And you're just like,
yeah, that's a little weird.
Okay.
Was it the same kind of food? Was it the big legs, yes. Turkey legs? It was?
No, they didn't have the turkey leg. They had something else.
Yeah.
It just smelled like cafeteria food is all I remember.
See, because the medieval times, and there's another one here in town where I live that Dolly Parton runs. It's a pirates theme one.
Oh, okay.
But the food kind of goes with the theme. You know what I mean?
Okay, right. Exactly. So. I couldn't even tell you, you know, what it was at the time, but it was just so bizarre, you know?
But so that was the live show. But what about the tour? When was the tour?
We're trying to do the timeline on the tour, and that was okay. So gladiators, and then we did international gladiators, and then we did tour, as a matter of fact. And then after tour, I think we did another show.
Okay.
Well, actually, no, that was the year I got fired because we held out for merchandising rights. Then I came back another year. And then I did that year. And then the live show was at the very end. So I think the tour was kind of right in the middle of it all.
Okay.
And that's when we did like 6 months around the United States.
That had to be fun.
That was insane.
You have a lot of that in the documentary you talk about.
Yeah. And it's interesting. All that footage was my footage that I was the only one. I don't know why I was the only one. Had a handheld camera.
No,
it wasn't the big one. It was a little one. So,
okay.
They kind of went from here to here. Yeah. So I had one of those little handheld ones, but I mean, we all laugh and go, dear God, almost thank God there wasn't cell phones back then. Cause there might've been a lot more footage that nobody wanted to get out there.
Yeah.
But, all that footage was my footage that I took on the tour.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that was just like, you know, we, the only thing we had to compare it to was, oh my God, this is like, you know, a rock and roll tour. I can only imagine how the musicians must've felt going out on tour like this.
Yeah. Yeah. So you guys got paid for that, right?
Yeah, that we did. Okay. For sure.
So that worked out for you.
Yeah.
I had, David Fischoff on the show.
Oh, okay.
And he was telling me about that. It was a couple of months ago I had him on, but he was telling me about a little bit about the tour.
Yeah.
That on.
Yeah. He was, we never saw him, obviously. Yeah. I think we saw him like the very first day that they announced the tour and he was there and he was the man behind it, and, you know, him and Johnny. But, we had no idea, absolutely no idea what to expect from that. So, you know, of course the first month we were excited. And then after it went into the second month, we started getting really tired.
Sure.
You know, by the third month, we're like, what do we sign up for?
Well, I could imagine, because being on the road is tiring itself as a musician, but to be doing what you guys were doing every night had to be even worse.
Yeah. It was pretty insane, you know, how we did all that. But, I mean, I wouldn't trade anything like that for the world. That was just one of the best times.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you get back from the tour, you went back to filming, right? That's what you said.
When we got back from the tour, it was interesting because, okay, did you say you've been out on tour before?
Yes.
Okay. So I don't know, maybe it's just what we have heard, but when we got back from the tour, we kind of hit like a really weird lull, you know, because you're so hyped up for the tour, constantly playing in front of people and every day and every night for 6 months. And then you come home and it's quiet. It's kind of a really weird transition that we felt. And we're all calling each other going, do you feel this? Do you feel that? You know? And we're like, oh, thank God we got to go back into filming in like 3 or 4 months, you know?
Okay. So it was a few months.
It was a few months after that. But however, that's the year I didn't go back because of the fact that Nitro and Gemini got this bright idea. And I'm going to say that because they're like, we're going to hold out for merchandising rights, you know, because we just got off tour. We realized how big we have become. You know, we sold out Madison Square Gardens. And I think they're like, it's only fair. And we're all on board. We're like, yes, it's only fair. But the problem was, is that Nitro and Gemini, they didn't really think it through to where they needed the whole team. For some reason, they thought that we could get away with just the most popular gladiators, you know? And so there was like three, four of us, you know? And at the last minute, well, Zap was part of us, but at the last minute that we didn't know this, Zap went back to the show, you know? And then obviously that's when we got the phone call. They were like, see ya. And Nitro and everybody's like, whoa. I was like, oh, thanks. Thanks, guys. You know?
Right.
So I stayed out a year. And then the following year after that, they brought me back on as a gladiator and they brought Nitro back on as a host.
Okay. Okay. So when Gladiators was over, what did you do? Did you have a plan or you just?
I was depressed. I was totally depressed. No, I didn't have a plan because of the fact that we didn't know when it was going to end. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, every year we had no idea if we were going back the next year because they never gave us a heads up. Literally, it was like a month before we'd start filming. All of a sudden, then you'd get your heads up that you went in. But even like the live show, at the live show, we thought we were going back into filming, you know, after the live show in Orlando. We thought that was just a small portion of the time. And then we went to the live show and I was there at the time, but I think the very last day we walked up and there was chains on the door. We're like, you know, everybody's calling, hey, you gonna open the door? Hey, you gonna, nobody was answering their phones. Nobody knew nothing. And the show just literally ended. No phone call, no email, no, hey, thanks for your service. You did a great job. Nothing. We didn't even hear from the television show that it had ended.
I mean, it's just wondering.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the worst communication company in the world, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, it sucked. Just to be, you know, blunt.
So is that when you got into film and TV or did that happen during Gladiator?
I was always trying to get my feet more and more wet with acting. And I had done a lot of television, a couple B-rated movies, but I wanted to go more and more into it. And it just so happened that year that our show ended, if you remember right, television made a big switch and they went into reality shows. And so their comedy shows dropped off, their drama shows dropped off, their action shows dropped off. And then all of a sudden there was this huge influx of reality shows. Well, if you remember, the reality shows didn't have celebrities on them. Reality shows had normal people on them that nobody had ever seen before. So therefore, they didn't want anything to do with us, you know, any reality show. And then the shows that were still on the air, comedy, dramedy, action, every actor in the world that had a show like that, comedy or drama, they were fighting for all the same roles that whatever was left. So it was hard for me to actually get any acting gigs after that, you know? So I just had to kind of very quickly reconvene. I was bartending for a little bit, but then I opened up a gym down in Orlando, Florida. So after the dinner show, as a matter of fact, probably about maybe 30 days before the dinner show ended, I was out seeking investors to actually open a gym in downtown Florida, in Orlando. So that's where I set my sights. But it still took about 6 months afterwards to, you know, it took a while to open the business.
Are you a personal trainer?
Not anymore. I was at one point in time. Yeah. Okay. I was a professional babysitter.
Is that what that's called?
You know, I give kudos to all the personal trainers out there because it's hard because nobody really wants to train. They either train because their doctor told them they had to train, or they got a divorce, or they're divorced and they're out on the single scene. There's always some reason, but there's just a handful of people that go, I love to train. Yeah. I just want to be in the gym all the time. There has to be, so personal training is a very hard business to do. And most of the people don't, because you get a ton of cancellations. They don't want to train, you know, they just don't. So yeah, I did it for, and that's why I opened my gym, to be honest with you. I was like, I don't want to personal train anymore. I just want to own the gym.
Okay. So the documentary, let's talk about that a little bit. Muscle Mayhem is out on Netflix. I watched it. It was like six episodes or something.
Five episodes. We were supposed to have six, but yeah, it went to five.
Okay. Now there's one thing I want to ask you that was in there. I don't want to give too much away on the documentary, but that part where you took the girl from Nitro, and did that happen?
I didn't take her. He never had her.
How'd that happen? Was that planned? Did you plan that or what happened there?
No, it wasn't planned at all. And that is actually, it is a true story. They kind of elaborated in some parts, of course. Look, when we're out on tour, we're all, you know, you're finding things to entertain yourself. Let's put it that way, you know, because you start to get a little bored. So, I mean, there's no doubt when we were on tour, I had a podcast once and somebody asked me this. They said, well, who got hit on the most and who has the highest numbers? And I started laughing because I was like, well, everybody was being hit on. I mean, we're gladiators.
Right.
So, you know, when we're performing and from the bottom, it's very true. When you're standing on the floor, you can see about 10 rows up, you know, when the lights are right there. So you can see 10 rows up. And when you're running around the auditorium at least 20 times in an evening, you can pinpoint people and you can pick them out, you know, who they are. And yes, there was this one girl and she was gorgeous. And all the guys spotted her. Everybody spotted her, you know. And, you know, she came down and everybody was signing autographs and, you know, it just kind of, you know, all the guys in the back were talking, going, hey, did you see the girl in that row right there? Blah, blah, blah. And they were all joking around going, nah, I'm going to ask her out. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do this. So yes, that's kind of how it really did happen in the documentary. But the funny thing was, is after I got talking to her, I realized that she wasn't interested in any of them.
Okay.
You know, and she was interested in me. And
I
so
I was laughing when I saw that.
Yeah, that was kind of funny. But there, the guys were definitely making a bet amongst themselves of who could get who.
Yeah.
And yes, it was very true that I waited until the very last minute to walk down into the lobby.
That's great. You know? I wish just you would have had your camera going so we could have
I know, just to rub their face in it. It was funny. But yeah, that happened. It was funny. And that's why there was like, yeah, I'm like, Nitro, I didn't take anything from you because you never had her in the first place.
Right. So how has the response been from the documentary?
Unbelievable. It's been, my social media is just going crazy. And it's not just the likes and the views. It's more of the messages I'm getting. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's like, oh my God, I love the documentary. Talk about the nostalgia. And it just brought me back to whether it was in their, you know, their childhood or their teens or in their 20s, whatever it may be. They remember that simpler time in the 90s, you know? So the response is just super amazing because the whole show kind of transports you back into the 90s and that nostalgic feeling. And I'll get even like, you know, some, you know, messages like, I remember, you know, building forts and assault guns or whatever it may be in our backyard, you know, with my brothers and sisters, maybe my dad. So just, I think it brings back more of a family feel as well, sure. You know, because everybody was watching. And it was interesting because at the time, either it was a family type of show to watch or it was playing at midnight on a Saturday night. Like, I mean, I remember when we would all go out to parties and then Saturday Night Live came on like at midnight and we would all be partying, but we would be having that in the background and watching it. Well, Gladiators was kind of the same way, I think, back then too. So yeah, the response has been amazing. The response, first of all, when the ESPN documentary came out, the response was, wow, that was pretty dark. And who's this Johnny character? And we don't like him. And how come you guys weren't in this documentary? Mm-hmm. You know, so that's why I went on my podcast and did an ESPN review, you know, and said, hey, this is why we weren't on the ESPN documentary, you know? I'm so happy. They did such a good job with the Netflix Muscles of Mayhem. Yeah. Nitro did a great job. He was a big part of that, I know, as well. So, you know, he made sure that they told our story, you know, the way that we wanted it portrayed. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stories landed on the editing floor. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
But they did a great job with it. And the response has been fabulous.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if you were happy with it, the way it came out. So good. Yeah.
I was very happy with it.
Yeah. It was really good. I mean, I watched it. I watched all of them, all the episodes, and it kept me wanting to watch it. So,
see, and that's when you know it's a good show. If if like you're binge watching something, you're like, no, I want to wait and, you know, I want to kind of savor this and let it go, you know, and just do another episode tomorrow night. But usually when it's really good, like, you know, on Netflix, when I'm watching a certain particular show, it's like, I'll watch 2 and 3 episodes back to back. And then I'm like, okay, wait, I got to save them. But yeah, a lot of people are binge watching all 5 at the same time. So that's a good sign.
Yeah. I got to the end. I was like, there's no more.
I know. Dang. I know.
You have to somehow do a part 2. I don't know what you could do with that. But.
Well, what we can do actually, believe it or not, and this is something that we wanted in the very, very beginning and it just didn't happen. But we thought episode 6 should have been a reunion. Episode 6 should have been a reunion with all the gladiators together in one room. And even if it was just one person asking questions around the room, because the energy that you get when all of us are together, there's nothing like it. And the personalities that come into play when we're all in one room, I mean, that's where it would have made a great show. Mm-hmm. So I want to say they're probably kicking it around. They want to see how the reviews go right now on Netflix. If we can stay in the top 10 for at least, I want to say 2 to 3 weeks, there's a possibility of having like a reunion show. I don't know. That's kind of what I heard, but who knows?
Yeah. Well, that'd be great. That'd be great.
I think it would.
It was very, very good. I enjoyed it a lot.
Thank you. Thank you.
Do you think American Gladiators would do well today?
I think that if they did it right, absolutely. I mean, as a matter of fact, the UK has a new version coming out today. I mean, not today, They've already chose all their gladiators. They chose the arena they're going to be in, and they're redoing the whole thing again. It's interesting because the UK follows kind of like what we do, but they kind of do it they did their show on a bigger, better scale than what we did. They filmed theirs in an arena that had 9,000 people, and that was 9,000 people live every time they filmed the show.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would fly here, of course, but that we did 8 years, they did 9 years. When we rebooted in 2008, they rebooted in 2008. Ours only lasted 2 seasons. The one season is 13 episodes. The second season is 13 episodes. Theirs went 3 season and ended because it didn't do well. They kind of followed suit with the darkness and all that kind of weird stuff. But they started up already. They already chose their gladiators. They're going back to the original format.
I think that would do well right now. I mean, especially because of the full contact. And, you know, it wasn't like wrestling where it was fake. It was hitting. It was going for it, you know, and with UFC popular now and everything, I think people would like it.
Oh, absolutely. The problem nowadays though would be the whole health and safety of shit. You know, I think they might be so nitpicky that it'd be like they'd probably, again, they overproduced it in 2008, you know? So if somebody got it today, hopefully it's not going to be a huge network that just overproduces the shit out of it. And that's what did not make it good.
Yeah. Yeah.
The more raw, the more real, the more authentic, the better the show.
Yeah. Agreed. All right, Lori. Well, I want to, one thing before we leave.
Okay.
I have these 2 packs of American Gladiator cards here from 1991. They're not opened.
Okay.
So I want to open them right now and we're going to see if we get your card in here.
Oh, you're going to really, you don't have to open them if you don't want to.
I'm going to open them.
All right.
Yeah. So let's see what we get here.
Is there gum in those?
I don't know. No, I don't think.
No gum, just cards.
All right. So we got, I'm not sure who that is.
That's just two. Oh, you know what that is? That's two contenders on the eliminator.
All right.
Kind of boring.
Got a knee jerk reaction.
Okay.
That one. Uh-oh.
What do we got there? Oh, you, that's my baseball card. That's awesome.
That's fun. Let's see who else we got. We don't go through. Laser's back.
Laser.
Gemini. There's one with all you guys.
How many is in a pack? Like 10? I can't even remember now.
I threw something
one. Something like that.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Oh.
Couldn't fit that last one to make
I know, ten. Right? Couldn't even do 10.
All right, let's get this last one real quick. See if we get another.
It's interesting. I have like a little store and it's called Ice T-shirts,
right.
Spelled T-E shirts, Ice T-shirts. And I actually put my baseball card, a couple 8x10s and stuff like that, because so many people are like, where can I get an autograph? You know, right. So they can go there and they can get their autograph photos.
Right. And that's chilling with ice.com, right? And that'll
chilling
take you there.
Chilling with Ice is my YouTube channel and my my podcast show, which goes across, you know, Spotify, iTunes, everything else. But I do have a t-shirt store and it's called Ice T-shirts. And I have a couple cool things on there. I have like, I created a logo that says OG Gladiators,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I have my Chilling with Ice t-shirts and hats. And, you know, it's kind of like a small little passion project, yeah. you know, it's really what things are in there. But then when this came out, I was like, okay, so I'm going to put some photos and baseball cards and stuff like that up, just, you know, because so many people had so many requests and I was like, okay, I don't know where to put these things. So I'm going to put them up on my store.
Yeah.
So that's
great. Yeah, and your podcast, I mean, any Gladiator fan will love your podcast. I definitely recommend it. Chilling with Ice. Can find it on YouTube. And there's so much more I could talk to you about today, but you go through a lot of it on your shows too.
Yeah.
So they can hear some more stuff and more about the ESPN and, you know.
Yeah. And the Chilling with Ice. I mean, I just get a little bit more in depth with my Gladiators, you know?
Yeah.
A little bit more about what they're doing now. Because obviously on the doc, they didn't really go through that.
Right.
So that's a lot of fun.
Cool.
And then it gives me and another Gladiator permission for an hour just to sit and talk Gladiators.
Yeah, that's great. So, all right. Well, I'm excited. I got your card. I got Laser too.
Oh, that's awesome. We're actually together doing a personal appearance in Maryland. It's a toy store. It's a toy show. In Maryland, I think it's November 3rd and 4th, as a matter of fact. That's what I want to get out of this whole documentary. It's like, if I can book some personal appearances, I'm happy.
Yeah, that's great. You
know? Yeah.
Well, listen, it's been great talking to you.
Thank you so much for having me on your show. I love it. I'll tell you what, let's make a deal.
What's that?
You send me a coffee mug and I'll send you my autographed baseball card.
Done deal.
Is it this
baseball card?
Whatever baseball card you want. Let's put it that way.
We'll do it. I'll hit you up.
You got it.
All right, Sounds Lori. Good. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.